we're going to turn to Paul. There's liars that are more important than the President of the United States. Paul is the poster child for most corrosive liar. Now, I did want to comment, though, on something that was said during the news. SRN is usually a waste of time, but if I heard them correctly, now we were having a debate with Scott over football players, and they break just because if we don't have on occasion a conversation about things that aren't his life and death, then, you know, it's just you'd go stark raving mad when you're talking about how corrupt the world is today. But, you know, the Obaminator was on 60 Minutes, and he never wants to accept blame for anything. So he blamed James Clapper, who is a scumbag, for being misled about the rise of the Islamic State. He won't even call them the Islamic State. He calls them ISIL. And that they misinformed him, according to the Obaminator, talking as the big shot at 60 Minutes. Well, sometimes when you tell lies, people hold you accountable, like we attempt to do on this program. Well, the intelligence community didn't like the fact that the Obaminator blamed them for lacking intelligence. And even though it's true that they lack intelligence, that wasn't the reason that the Obaminator was oblivious. And SRN reported here this morning that according to the intelligence briefing community at the that briefs the President of the United States, he misses more of the intelligence briefings than he attends. He doesn't read the briefings, and he doesn't attend the briefings. That might be part of why he is so stupid. But, mind you, while he lacks proper knowledge to make good decisions. His biggest issue, really, is his lack of judgment and his willingness to knowingly twist what little evidence he seems to process to come to the opposite conclusion of what the evidence actually reveals. So even if he were more appropriately informed, and that really is a requirement of that job, particularly when you're sending men off to die, particularly when you're squandering the nation's resources, particularly when you're pushing nations into a position of war against you, you at the very baseline ought to be better informed as a requirement of even accepting that job. But he was wholly unqualified for the job of president. We don't want to say so because he's an African-American, and that would be racist to say so. No, it's
intolerant.
It has absolutely nothing to do with race. He's totally unqualified for that job. Never worked a day in his life for a business. Never met a payroll. Never invented a product. Never did any job that created any value for anybody. In his entire life, he was wholly unqualified for the position. And he now is someone who is so egotistical that he doesn't think he needs to study to make the right conclusions. And he is so dishonest that he thinks he can lie about everything and get away with it.
I don't want to get too far away from, you know, what the third hour is supposed to be. But it also we knew that from the video I sent you this morning. Of the when the lady was being questioned about the drone bombings, and how they so you got the target that you intended to get. Well, we couldn't identify him, so you don't know who you killed. Well, we know who we killed.
Well, not exactly. No, we don't know. We could not exactly. We couldn't exactly identify. And here's the White House and two White House aides, one from the military, one from the State Department, and they're talking about the CIA drone program. And so the first drone, this happens to go back now, the Bush administration, the first drone killed a tall Arab man because he was tall. Bin Laden's a tall Arab man. I spy a tall Arab man. Let's go kill him. And this review went on where Holder was asked, you know, come on, man. I mean, you're killing a lot of people with drones. You've flown thousands of these missions. You've killed thousands of people with these drones. And there's no due process here. There's no indictments. There's no evidence being brought against these people. There has been absolutely no proof that anybody that you killed had ever killed an American or even threatened to kill an American. And yet you're killing them willy-nilly. And so this particular review was having a discussion. It was a White House briefing. And so they had a whole group of people, the reporters in the audience, and said, can you tell us then on this last drone strike who you killed? And the two people that were representing the State Department and the White House and the military looked at each other and says, no, not exactly. So you don't know who you killed. Well, we didn't say we don't know who we killed. We just said that we don't exactly know the individuals. Were they Taliban that you were killed with the drones? We don't know that either. But then the woman stepped up and says, but we know they were legitimate targets. But you don't know who they were. You don't know what their affiliation. Well, we know they were legitimate targets, but we don't know who we killed. It was absolutely stunning to watch these questions and these answers. They had no idea who they killed. They've actually now, because they don't like this notion that there have been so many civilian casualties, that they've redefined civilian for the purpose of reporting on their drone attacks. And that is that any male of fighting age between 15 and 45 that is killed as collateral to the individual they were targeting is considered a co-conspirator. So if you're just the right age and sex, you're automatically worthy of the United States killing and justifying killing. Now, the other thing that was really interesting in that video is talked about how the individual that we target and kill has to be deemed to be an imminent threat to the United States. An imminent threat to the United States. So you say, okay, well that's straightforward. Okay, now we've got someplace. So this particular television program went into, in fact, it wasn't their television program, it was NBC News, went into the documents used by the Obama administration to define imminent threat.
Imminent threat, yep.
and imminent was they specifically said of imminent threat that it did not mean that the threat had to be deemed to be forthcoming in a short duration of time or in the immediate future, but only that a threat was possible over a period of time. It's like you take a word, imminent, and then say, well, we're going to completely disregard what that word means. And then threat. Threat didn't mean that the threat was against
here's the
United States, would take place in the United States. Go ahead.
Here's the exact what they said. Imminent threat does not require the United States to have clear evidence that a specific attack on U.S. persons and interests will take place in the immediate future. That's how they define imminent threat. he made the comment of...
Why don't we take these two words, which we can report to the American people and say, oh, well, imminent threat, that's worthy of us trying to stop. And then they define imminent threat as... Read that again. It's the opposite of what imminent threat would mean.
Imminent threat does not require the United States to have clear evidence that a specific attack on U.S. persons or interests will take place in the immediate future. and by the way,
we're laughing. We're using very expensive American CIA drones to murder people around the world, and this is our lack of justification.
Yeah, and he went on to say that maybe they just don't know what imminent means, and he pointed out that, if a woman says, I'm going to have a baby, it's imminent that I'm going to have a baby. It doesn't mean like I might have a baby a few months down the road, or maybe not, maybe I won't. It means, get your car keys, I'm having a baby.
Right. My water is broken. Oh, and it went all the way through. Every aspect of this, we have completely lost our mind.
Yeah,
we have become an immoral nation that has completely lost its way. It is revolting. We ought not. You know, I watched Monday Night Football last night, and I had to turn it off at the beginning with the two things that I just found reprehensible. One was here in Arrowhead Stadium for Monday Night Football. 90% of the spectators were dressed in Chiefs gear. And they were all hollering that war cry and doing the tomahawk chop all in unison and were yelling at the top of their lungs. And you say, God, get a life. I mean, it's a damn game. It's a life. You aren't a member of the team. It's a game. You're not playing in the game. You're a spectator in the game. Get a life. Stop this trying to identify with others and live life through others is really disturbing. But the second thing was they had an American flag out there in the middle of the field, and you know the flyover of the military hardware. And everybody stand up, put your hand over your heart, and show the great respect for your nation and its symbol. I mean, it's just gag me. Come on, wake up. I know that collectively, the nation's leaders all set the brains somewhere in an alcohol jug or pickled them with pot. I don't know what they did. But it doesn't mean we all have to disjoin our brains. It doesn't mean that everyone who is indoctrinated in political correctness has to remain a victim of political correctness for the rest of their lives and cease to exercise good judgment. I mean, wake up. We aren't who we say we are. We aren't who we think we are. We've stopped being that country a long time. Long time ago. You have a soul. And so long as you remain indoctrinated by politics and patriotism and militarism, all of this, you're going to squander it. Now turning to the vastly more deadly liar. That's saying a lot considering how many people have lost their lives from the political liars, the military liars of this last 100 years, from Mao Zedong to Adolf Hitler to Joseph Stalin. And when you have to think of the people who lost their lives in the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, and the people who lost their lives as a result of breaking those countries and creating a region that was accessible for terrorists, you've got to include George Bush and Barack Hussein Obama and the murderous brigade. But they don't even compare to the souls that have been squandered, infected, and destroyed by the poison pen of one Paul of Tarsus, the self-proclaimed apostle Paul. He wrote in Galatians 1:12, "But neither because by man associating myself with it, nor was I taught, but to the contrary, by way of a revelation of Iesu Christu." Every bit of this is a lie. He just finished a non-question question. He didn't use an interrogative in his question, where he posed the quandary: was he trying to seduce and negotiate with, beguile God, or was he trying to seduce and negotiate with connive people? Who is he trying to influence, God or people? And doesn't answer the question, of course, and the answer either way is bad. Then he says that he was, but neither because I by man associating myself with it. So he's saying that his message wasn't associated with himself, and yet it's only his message. It's his gospel against the disciples, against Yahusha, against Yahweh, against everyone. It's an egregious lie. Paul and Christianity are one and the same. They're inseparable. Then he says, nor was I taught. What the hell? He brags about being not only a student of Gamaliel, of rabbinic school, but being the best student. He says, man, I exceeded beyond anybody else as a student. I was taught. I know these traditions. And now he says he wasn't taught. Was he lying then, or is he lying now? Or was he lying both times? But to the contrary, by way of a revelation of Isu Christu, bull. He has three different accounts of his engagement with Isu Christu. And reports a different outcome each of the three times. But none of the three times did Isu Christu say anything more to him than Shaul. Shaul, why are you working against me? Why are you harassing me? And it's difficult to resist, to kick against the goad. That's it. Each time he tells the story, there's details always change. How many people were there, whether the others saw it, whether anybody else heard it, whether they fell down, whether they stood up, whether the Dionysus line, it's difficult to kick against the goad, was said or not said. Each time he tells the story, he tells it differently. The facts always change. But there was never any revelation, ever. None of the three accounts does he provide a revelation. Now, here in Galatians, he's going to say that he went off and spent 3 years in Arabia. Except the timeline that's presented by his attaché, Luke, in Acts, doesn't allow for that. Nor does the timeline that he presents in Galatians. Not only isn't there the opportunity for 3 years, there's not even the opportunity for 3 months. There is no time in his life that he received a revelation. And what we know for certain, because Yahusha told us during the Olivet Discourse, during his last significant presentation to his disciples, that there would be someone who would even confuse them, who would claim to have seen him in the wilderness. But when that person made that claim, no, they're lying. So contradicting his previous statement, while at the same time contravening Yahweh's and Yahusha's approach to teaching, Paul would have us believe that he did not associate with men and that he was not taught. He is evidently not ready to disclose the fact that he had been in rabbinic school for many years. He didn't want to acknowledge that the Torah that he has been assailing is actually Yahweh's book of teaching. That's what Torah means, is to teach. And that he wanted to infer that while the Torah had been and continued to be sufficient to teach all of us what we need to know about God and how to engage in a relationship with Him, how to participate in the covenant, as Yahusha so often affirmed, that source of teaching was not relevant to Paul. No, he had to have a personal revelation. The revelation that was given to Dode that caused David to be so brilliant and to write such magnificent songs about Yahweh and his relationship with him. No, Not the same source of learning that Doe to David followed. No. Rather than learning from the Torah, Paul was special. He would have his own private revelation. Now, mind you, never once does Paul say, in that revelation, I was told ABC. He never once says, here's who told it to me. He never once says, let me quote directly from the revelation I received. Never once. Why? Because it never happened. And it's preposterous to think that it did. And that's what's so sad about Christians. They don't think. Paul makes this statement. Yeah, I got this revelation from God. I wasn't taught by men. And then Paul contradicts himself over and over again and never once demonstrates that there was any time for a personal revelation in his chronology of events, nor it never shares any information that he received from that revelation, and he does disclose that he was a great rabbinic student to be a Pharisee. And they don't put it together. And they don't put together Yahusha's warning to his disciples at the conclusion of his Olivet Discourse that there's going to be a guy that comes along that's going to make this claim, and when he does, he's going to fool you, but don't let him. He's lying. And Paul is the only one who made that claim within the lifetimes of the disciples. And he did get him. And it's amazing that he could fool anybody because he's a dunderhead. He's an ignoramus. Now, I understand that Yahusha's disciples were not skilled in rhetoric. They were not debaters. They didn't know that this man violated every logical flaw known to man. That's why everybody that was educated at this time rejected him. According to Paul, his message had been previously undisclosed, and that he alone had access to it and the right to convey it. And it was miraculously unveiled just to him, appearing to him, any revelation attested by no one else. So it begs the question, if this is so, why did Yahweh bother revealing his Torah? Why provide that teaching? Why meet with the children of Yisrael? Why etch the 10 statements in stone? If this is so, why did Yahusha bother with disciples? Why did he bother with the Sermon on the Mount? Why did he bother with any of it? Why bother? If this is so, why do you need Matanyah, Matthew, and Yahochanan, John? If this is so, why was the revelation to Yahochanan and not to Paul? Why isn't there a revelation of Paul instead of a revelation of Yahochanan and John? If this is so, why did Yahweh bother to say anything through his prophets? If this is so, why did Yahusha ever speak? If this is so, why did Yahusha direct those with questions to the Torah and prophets for answers instead of to Paul? If he was going to answer every question through Paul, why would he direct people's attention to the Torah and prophets for answers? Come on, Christian, think. I hear you out there just stammering all over yourself, trying to accuse me of being mean-spirited. But think, for crying out loud. His position is preposterous. He's contradicted himself over and over again, and what he's claiming is completely, totally inconsistent with Yahweh, who just happens to be God, with Yahusha, who just happens to be the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, set apart from him to be the physical witness to the Torah. Everything that he says is ridiculous. And yet, you've embraced a religion founded on this man's verbal diarrhea? Don't you care enough about your soul to say, no, that's ridiculous? Just because you'll no longer be accepted at the local church and that you know, you'll be ostracized from some in your community if you embrace the truth because they won't be willing to do it? Are you willing to squander your soul, the souls of those you love, because you go along with a lie knowingly? If this is so, how could Paul be speaking for Yahusha when God's attitude, his approach, and his affirmations were all the antithesis, the absolute opposite of what Paul is communicating here? How could Paul's message be different and in conflict with a message delivered out of heaven if he was speaking for the God of heaven? Since it would be natural to assume that I'm sabotaging Paul by making him appear illiterate, please note the scholastic Nestle Allen interlinear in what they published. But not for I, from man, took along it, nor was I taught, but through uncovering of Jesus Christ. Beyond the fact that I now understand that the underlying purpose of Galatians was to separate Yahusha from the Torah and thereby negate his sacrifice while nullifying the means to our salvation. To say that he was not taught this message is to say that he did not learn the truth in the same place Yahweh and Yahusha directed all of us to go for understanding, the Torah. Why does Yahweh constantly say, Shamar Torah, observe the Torah, read it, consider it, examine it, if it's not a book of teaching? Why would God say, don't add anything to the Torah, don't take anything away from the Torah, if he then was going to go to this guy to completely take everything away from the Torah and add an entire New Testament wholly in conflict with it? If God is that big a boob, if he's that much a liar, if he's that incompetent, if he's that unreliable, then what are the chances that he got it right when he changed everything and negated everything through this illiterate fool? That's really the question you have to ask yourself if you're a Christian. If everything God said is negated, if what he proposed is preposterous, then why, if Paul's claim is true, that he picked this guy to completely change everything, that would the new plan be reliable? Think it through. It's a lie so obviously thin. It's a myth so obviously untrue, so unworthy, so irrational, so utterly stupid, that just because it's popular, don't let it ruin your soul. Don't be a lemming jumping off that same cliff into the abyss of faith. Neither Paul, nor you, nor I need private instruction regarding God's public disclosure. Proving this, the disciple Yahochanan recorded, Yahusha answered him, he said, I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in the synagogues and in the temple where all of the Yehudim come together. And I spoke nothing in secret. So here's Yosha. I spoke nothing in secret. He's speaking Hebrew, by the way, and we're conveying it in English. And in Hebrew, there is no past, present, or future tense. When he says, I spoke nothing in Hebrew, the verb he would have used was dabar. And it would mean that I have never spoken anything in secret. It would mean I'm not speaking in secret. It would mean I will never speak anything in secret. The nature of Hebrew. It's the language that this was being communicated. And therein is a hell of a problem for Pauline Christianity, because he says no secret revelations, period, full stop. So, you want to contrast that with Paul's secret and private revelation? It's impossible. Yahweh will also say that his Torah provides understanding, and that it's easy to understand for anyone that's open-minded. So we have Yosha, as recorded by Yahuconan, saying the opposite of what Paul claimed. He says, I never spoke anything in secret. I haven't. I won't. I'm not. I spoke openly. Yahweh spoke openly to the world. Doesn't reveal things in secret. The whole concept of the prophets is for Yahweh to communicate through them, not to keep secrets by them. Yahweh didn't reveal insights to Yashayah, Yirmiyah, Daniel, Zechariah, and say, oh, by the way, guys, keep this to yourself. Don't write it down. This is just your own secret stuff. But Paul claims just the opposite. Completely out of character with God, and completely inconsistent with Yosha's own testimony. Somebody is lying. You got everybody saying the same thing except one guy over here, and he's lying. He's different. That, of course, means that what Paul just wrote was an absolute lie. Yosha's statement and Paul's cannot be reconciled. This was not Paul's only claim to secret revelation. In the New American Standard Bible's rendition of Romans 16:25. And remember, Romans is most important letter written to the very people that Yahweh calls the beast in Daniel, the beast that is the most savage of all beasts and the longest enduring of all beasts, is Rome, becoming the Roman Church. And so in Romans 6:25, he says, now to him who is able to establish you according to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ, which he never quotes, according to the revelation of the mystery which has been kept secret for long ages, but is now manifested. A secret. You know, one of the things that's amazing about the Torah and prophets is that they reveal truth, past, present, and future, from the instant the universe was conceived to the instant a new one will be conceived. The whole plan is laid out all of time right before you. There is nothing that is important that is not revealed, and it's all there. No secrets. No new profound truth. Only constant reaffirmations of the same plan, the same God. The according to my gospel confirms the obvious, but nonetheless I appreciate the confession. This is the gospel of Paul, not the gospel of Jesus Christ. But God doesn't keep secrets, at least not regarding anything vital to our relationship with him. Mysteries form the sum and substance of myths, which permeate pagan religions. And since Paul never once cited Yahusha's preaching in a rare moment of truth, calling the gospel he was preaching his own should have been sufficient for Christians to reject him and their religion. God does not have a gospel, nor should you. The speaking, just conversing here, of revealing something important regarding Yasha. This is now the third time in three tries that Paul has not only placed his title after his name, but omitted the requisite definite article. The backwards approach gives the impression that Iesus' last name was Christou, that Jesus was the first name, Christ was the second name, further distancing him from Yahweh. In reality, the title Messiah, corrupted to Messiah, is never used as a title in the entirety of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And the one place that it is presented prophetically of Yahusha, it's a adjective. It's not ha Messiah. The definite article does not precede it, so it's not a title. And it's not even written as a noun, much less a proper noun. It's used as an adjective to modify a messenger. So it's a messenger who has been prepared and set apart. The Messiah modification of messenger tells us that the messenger, who we now know is Yahusha, who is the messenger out of heaven, is set apart from Yahweh and prepared with knowledge of the Torah to do the mission for which he was sent. There is no title, Messiah.